Welcome to the Round 10 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and I'm joined this week by two old friends. Our friend FB Donkey is actually away this week, and maybe away next week as well, because he's welcomed a new addition to the family, Thomas Neil Hunt. So congratulations to FB Donkey. Awesome time for him and his family. And in his stead, we have two fantastic guests, and they've been on the show before. First up is Faz, really, really old-time regular from the show. Ages back when we first started out, it was Faz and I recording together, so he's back on to help us out this week. Thanks, Faz.
Yeah, good day, guys. Great to be back for the first show of 2014.
And of course, Dunny, who we have had come over from Dream Team Talk last year a couple of times, and really, really psyched to have him on as well. He's obviously a fountain of fantasy knowledge, so thank you, Dunny.
No worries. Thanks for having me again, Marcus.
So we'll start off this week as we do every week, and let's just go around, talk a little bit about how our teams went, and you guys can let us know how you're going for the actual seasons and catch us up with how your teams are going. So maybe Faz, why don't you kick us off?
Things are looking up finally for me this season. Had a score of 21-20 on the weekend, so very happy with that. Ranking is up to 32-40, so that's about the highest it's been all season, I think.
Nice.
So yeah, buyers have been friendly to me, and hopefully I can, you know, ride that on over the coming weeks. Got the team looking pretty nice, almost, you know, fully upgraded now, so pretty happy, I'd say.
Yeah, you're traditionally a fast finisher, Faz. Always threaten my ranking as we draw close to round 23. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see how you go for the rest of the season. And Dunny, how are you going so far this year?
Got off to a very poor start this year, mate. Didn't do too well. I had a couple of my early picks fail on me, but this round did okay. Got 2099 for round 9. My ranks are pretty low, actually. I'm in about 5,000 sort of range, so that's not too crash hot. But things are looking up. Finally got around to doing some upgrades after I had to deal with quite a few injury issues early on in the season.
Well, I think you both actually smashed my scores. And I mean, boys, 2099, and what was yours? 2100 plus. That's a brilliant score for only 18 players playing, so well done, guys. I know it was a big scoring round, and Ablett, of course, got that 184, but I only scraped in a 2033, and I thought that might be good enough to move me up just a little bit, but nah, didn't go too well, and I think I dropped like a 10-20 spot, something like that. Main culprits were Steve Johnson. I brought him in this week, brought in Akers this week, just paying everywhere. Zorko 12. The last 2 weeks, just a lot going wrong, and it's hard to look at my team when Rioli, Hodge, just people falling apart during the buys is especially painful. So hoping for better things to come, and I guess we should mention FB Donkey's score. And I think, Dunny, you have the task of that. Mark's entrusted you with that.
Well, I actually must admit, I don't know his score off the top of my head, but he did want me to mention that he was only 8 points behind you in the rankings now. So, and he did beat your score this week.
Yep.
So he was very keen to get that mentioned in today's podcast.
Yeah. So, of course, FB Donkey is charging right up at me. And I was hoping this week I had more players than him playing and be able to keep the pace, but no, he's catching up. I think this week I definitely have the edge over him in terms of players playing. So hopefully he doesn't catch me during the buys, because...
Actually, yeah. I just found his score. He had 2,098.
Oh, you beat him by 1 point. So you all did really, really well this week. So well done, guys. We'll move on to the actual show now. And what we've done is, as we do every week, take questions from social media. So facebook.com/supercoachcoach. And at supercoachcoach, you can connect with us there and, of course, ask us questions. We pretty much structure our shows every week with those questions. So thank you to our community for those. And we'll jump straight in with a question here from Jared Owen. He's moving on Laidler because Sydney have their bye this week, and he's thinking about Matthew Jentsch, and also is asking about any other cheaper options.
So yeah, Matthew Jentsch, I don't mind him as a pick. I actually obviously get to see a bit of him living here in Adelaide, so I get to see a fair few of their games and a fair bit of coverage about the Crows.
Yeah.
He went off in that round 7 just before their bye with what was supposed to be broken ribs. Said he was going to be out for about 3, actually tweeted for people to trade him out, and then he played last week against Collingwood.
evil.
I actually ended up I think a few people ended up holding him because they had other issues, but yeah. You know, he's been playing that, I guess, a sort of a loose-ish kind of role. He's been playing the role that Ricky Henderson had last year, and to be honest, I think he's going to keep that up for a while yet, because I think Ricky Henderson's still a little bit away, so I don't mind him as a selection. We don't really know what's going to happen when Henderson comes back, though, but the way he's been playing, I can't see him certainly losing his spot, that's for sure.
And I think in terms of the cheap options, he's almost at that basement price. I think you kind of have to go up from that sort of price range, so he's sort of that cheapest at that mid price range, because I think Hearn would be your next step up, fresh off the bye, 412k, and he had that 7 in round 2 when he was injured, and then of course missed a few rounds, and I think his 7 only just cycled out of his price movement, so he's right for the picking as well. And apart from that 7, he scored 99, 97 and 101, and although he's typically been inconsistent, last year we saw him get tagged for a stretch of I think 8 games, and he was still managing to average about 98 during that time. So he could be a good pickup, but obviously injury prone as well. Anyone you fancy, Faz, in the back line for cheap?
Actually, this is all pretty interesting to me. I'm looking at doing an upgrade in the back line this week. So yeah, hadn't actually considered her, and he looks like a good pick. I was looking more, I've got a bit of cash in up my sleeve, so I was looking at more the premium range, kind of Jimmy Bartel or Cade Simpson or Walker from Carlton. So yeah, I think maybe Hearn is looking pretty likely given the saving I'd have there.
I think the other two you could probably look at are Enright. A few people took him over Bartel last week, and he only delivered 79, but Geelong didn't play that well against Fremantle. You've got Hanley, who's of course been affected by injury again this year. He's got the bye this week, so you can't exactly bring him in, but look out for him after this week. He's at 421k, so really, really cheap as well. And I mentioned this as a smoky a couple of weeks ago, but Scott Thompson, last year I think averaged 95 or close to that, and this year hasn't had the best start to the season, but he's still their number one defender. He's still a really, really good player. He could be a smoky for a 95, 98 sort of average as well. On to the next question here, and it's about Jed Buse. So Adam Tanti wants to know, will he play consistent footy down at Geelong? Either of you watch Buse and have anything to comment about his game?
I actually liked his game. I think he played quite well, did enough in my eyes to keep his spot. But I guess we know that Geelong like to have that. They'll come in for a few games and then go out for a few games. But, but you're probably the most qualified to talk about this one, Marcus.
Yeah. I guess the best part about it is 124K, so that basement price, and available on the back line where we just seem to be struggling for options. So like you said, I absolutely agree. Looked like he belonged at AFL level after that one outing. The problem, like you said, is as soon as you don't look like you're ready to play, as soon as you have a poor game, there's somebody ready in the VFL to slot straight into your position. And I think Buse has direct competition from so many players. I mean, Thurlow was a fantasy relevant player who's not getting games, who is pretty much in that same sort of position. I'd only really do it if you need the cash from the downgrade, and let's say you already have two bottom priced options in your midfield in Hallahan and Akers. You might not want to downgrade to another midfield option because you're going to be stuck with 150-250k rookie on field for the next 3-4 weeks, and that's going to hurt a lot. So Buse might be an option because you need the downgrade and you may need it in the back line, and I don't think they're much better options going around at the moment because we're light on rookies. So Robert Bobby Gaines asked from Facebook about best value mids apart from Selwood. So obviously we flagged Selwood last week off his bye. He scored way better than Johnson. Would have been better just taking him instead of Johnson and not waiting for him to fall in price. He only dropped 6k in the end. So yeah, he's the obvious get this week. Anybody else apart from Selwood at that premium category?
I think you're right, mate. I think Selwood is clearly the obvious pick for this week. Looking at the premium stakes, I guess someone who's a bit left field, I guess Nick Del Santo. He's got a break even of 96. He's only going to cost you 577, so he's not hugely expensive, but he is averaging 116. He's doing really well over there at North now, getting a fair bit of the ball in the midfield. Doesn't seem to be picking up the tag. That seems to be going to Wells when he's out there. So I don't mind him as a value pick in the mids there, and someone who is going to score quite well for you.
I like that selection. It's a bit like picking a Barlow type. The one loose player generally gets those outside points, and they're generally good for 110 sort of average, and Del Santo possibly more. So, yeah, I really like that pick. It was hard to pick him at the start of the year with all those round 8 players, but absolutely an option now. What do you guys reckon about Liberatore? Is he an option fresh off the bye?
Yeah, well, he's been looking in great form recently. Obviously, he had that huge score just before his bye with 171, and before that was 139. So again, a bit like Steve Johnson, has that humongous ceiling to his scoring. Doesn't seem to pick up the tag. I think they probably look at going to Griffin first. That's certainly someone I'm hoping can turn it around, because I've got him in my team. Presents a bit of value, I guess, at just under 500K, but hasn't been pushing out the scores that you'd be hoping. Liber, on the other hand, yeah, averaging 113 so far this year. A young player who you think would keep improving, so I don't see any reason why he can't keep that up and maybe even push it up a little higher for the rest of the season.
What do you reckon about Griffin, Donny? Do you see him as somebody that's able to pick it back up? Because, you know, Faz has got him, and we have had other questions on social media about Griffin and whether or not to actually turf him.
I certainly wouldn't be turfing him. I must admit I've had my eye on him. I don't have him at the moment, but I am keenly watching him, just waiting for that form to turn around. I think he can do it. Off the top of my head, I think he had struggled a little for a patch last season as well. Can't remember if it was last season or the year before, but I think he will. I think he'll get back into that swing of things and really start to turn it back on. And I think Liberatore's form, if he does start to attract that tag, that'll really help Griffin come back on, I think.
So I guess you'll be hoping for that, Faz. What do you guys reckon about Mark Murphy? He's 570K, again, fresh off the bye, and Mark's been bragging about this selection all year, so do you guys reckon he's good for a top 8 spot? Can he maintain a 115 average that we've known him to be good for in the past?
I think the key for me is, does Chris Judd back and take any tag away from him? I must admit I haven't been watching Carlton all that closely, but from what I've seen, he does seem to be getting a little bit of more attention than he ordinarily had in the past. But, you know, he's still averaging 113, got a break even of 130. So, you know, he's not going to drop massively if he does drop at all this week. He does have the Crows, so I would expect someone like Kerridge to potentially go to him. So I think he presents some value, and I think you're right. I think he can get up there into that top 8, top 10 midfielders by the end of the year.
One really good thing that I saw from him was when he scored all right against that McCaffer tag with 90, when McCaffer had just been crushing opponents fantasy-wise. And his lowest score has been 72 from the year. And like you said, he hasn't had Judd. He's been copying this attention. And a low of 72, high of 153 has been really, really rather impressive from the captain, who's been under quite a large amount of media scrutiny. So hoping for him to continue that. And I might myself be looking at picking Mark Murphy up this week, because certainly a very tempting prospect with his consistency.
Can I just throw one more at you there, mate? Pretty much the same price. Someone who I don't think gets the attention he possibly should is Rory Sloan, sitting at 574K, hasn't scored under 100 all year.
He's certainly one that I've been looking out for every year in terms of a breakout candidate, because he's presented that sort of 105 average, but with that potential to maybe even break through to that 115. And this year he's actually, you know, sort of doing that 112. And like you said, his consistency makes him very attractive. And it's not like Adelaide have been playing very consistent football themselves. So you'd almost say that over the course of the season, he's not been as explosive as Dangerfield, but it surprised me that he's been more consistent than Dangerfield. You know, I certainly have known Dangerfield for his tenacity at the contest in the past, but Sloan certainly has that same sort of attitude to be able to replicate those sorts of results. So, I mean, if there's a time for Sloan to mature into the AFL, it's probably this year.
Mm.
He's got the age profile to do it. So I don't mind him as a smoky selection, really, but I kind of wonder, does he have those big 150 games and will they come, you know, 2, 3, 4 times a season, which you sort of really want to get the really big averages, and also to balance out, you know, inevitably he'll have a quiet game here or there, you would think. Interesting selection. Are you considering him yourself?
Not at the moment, but I've heard a few people talking about him, and it forced me to sort of have a bit of a closer look at him. And once again, obviously, we get a fair bit of coverage of the Crows here, but I think you're right. I don't know that he's got that 150 in him just at the moment, getting 3 or 4 of those really big scores. But, you know, if you needed someone to slot into your, you know, your sort of M7, M8 that's really not going to let you down, he could be the guy.
Yeah. I think if Sloan were playing for a top 4 team this year, I'd pick him almost instantly. Mm. But it's really hard to get those 150s when you're not in the top 4 team, I think, and you're not that explosive type player. So we'll move on to a rookie now. Cameron Shenton is the guy that is, I hope that I've pronounced that correctly. He's 155K, mid forward eligibility, 47, and then last week scored 99. So he's on the bye, but I noticed a lot of people asking about him, so I'm guessing people are just looking for a downgrade option, and they'd rather have them play after the buys than not play, pick somebody that plays this week but drops out for the rest of the season. So how do you guys see Shenton? Do you know much about him?
Not a heap, to be honest. I know he was a rookie pick originally and played one game last year, so that's why his price is a little bit higher. He's at 155K, so unfortunately you'll have to take a bit of a hit if you're downgrading to him. But yeah, plays as a small defender and was a bit of an accumulator in the VFL last year. He often got above 20 disposals, and I think we saw that last week in the loss against Gold Coast. He was still pretty handy in picking up touches. So yeah, it looks like a pretty handy pick, and obviously the DPP is really handy. Even if he was to not get games later in the season, the fact that you could use him to cover on two lines, that's really helpful.
I guess the big issue with him, of course, is that the Saints do have the bye this week, so probably not the right time to get him. But I think next week, yeah, with this break even of minus 54, certainly going to make you some cash, even though it's not bargain basement to start with.
I guess people are probably looking at him because the other options that we have for rookie downgrades are Bewes that we talked about before, and we'll talk about a couple more in the forward line a bit later on. But like you said, ideally we'd pick him up next week. St Kilda have a pretty weak outfit, and you're hoping that he stays in the team to provide cover if you get late season injuries. So we'll move on to a question here from James Hawkins now from Twitter, and he's asking about cashing in on Derek's from Sydney to a non-playing player. So obviously Sydney on the bye this week, and he's considering cashing him in, but that means zero ruck cover for him moving forward. How do you guys feel about Derek's? Do you guys have him, and how do you feel about going forward without ruck covers as opposed to with ruck cover? Is it worth the 150, 200K that you're cashing in?
I personally don't have any ruck cover at the moment, but that's not by choice. It's purely because Curry's not getting a game again.
Yeah.
And good old Fraser Thurlow hasn't got a game yet, but I must admit I didn't pick him for his playing. I don't like the idea a great deal. I like the idea of having that ruck cover. I mean, depends who you've got in your first two ruck positions, I guess. Personally, I've got Sandy and Cox, and I'm always a little nervous that one of those guys is going to get a niggle and be out, particularly Sandy.
Yeah.
And yeah, obviously that would force a trade if one of those guys did go down for me. But look, I have Derrickson in a form of the game, and I'll certainly be keeping him.
Yeah, I personally do have Derrickson on my side, and he's been really handy over the byes. My rucks are Sandilands and Lobie, so Lobie missed in round 8. And, you know, I luckily had Derek as an emergency, so got his score then. And then last week, Loeb had his bye. So, yeah, I was able to avoid making any trades in the ruck through the byes. And, yeah, I think probably I was having a look at it because, you know, he's at a nice price now, so you would make a bit of cash. The only one I could think that you might be looking to downgrade to is if you don't have Fraser Thurlow, you could bring him in to get that link up with the forward line. But then again, I haven't seen a whole lot of premiums that have that forward ruck eligibility that I'd really be looking at. I probably will hold on to him for now.
Yeah, that was actually the big debate of last week's show, Faz, whether or not those ruck forward premiums are worth it. So, yeah, Mark's in your camp as well. After seeing Dixon's 60 on the weekend, I'm sort of slowly moving toward that camp as well. Hopefully Bell Chambers can turn it around. I think he's the last beacon of hope for the ruck forward premium link for 2014. All right, we'll move on to a question here now from Blair Dewsbury, and he's asking about downgrading Pavlich. So Pavlich is on his bye this week, and despite having a good patch of form, unfortunately, as the forward line is this year, he's been piled on and often having to deal with multiple opponents, and over the course of the last three games, that sort of hurt him a little bit. So 80 and 61 were his first two games, and then he had a patch where he didn't score below 96 for four rounds, which was awesome. Round 7, round 8, 260s, and last week 98. So he doesn't quite seem to have that 150 in him. Pavlich's scoring ceiling seems quite limited moving forward, and that's why people are considering trading him out, I suppose. 434,000, he's dropped, I think, 3K from his starting price, so it didn't actually move up in price. Ended up being pretty much fair value at the end of the day. How do you guys feel about trading out Pavlich? Would you recommend it or not?
I've been a bit disappointed with his scoring this year. Obviously, he's not spending as much time in the midfield as he did in the previous few years when he was scoring quite well before his Achilles injury. The one thing that I will say that potentially might sway someone to keeping him is I actually heard something today that for the rest of the season, they only play three more of the current top eight sides, and that's in rounds, I think it's 20, 21 and 22, and that's Hawthorn, Port and Geelong. So, yeah, that sort of says that he's got some, shall we say, easier games coming up.
That's the first I'm hearing of that, and my eyes are just lighting up for Fife after the bye, to be honest, more than anything.
Yeah, I must admit he's the one I'd be looking at more than Pav. But yeah, if I had Pav, I'd be tempted to keep him, but I can certainly agree with and see the side of anyone who's considering getting rid of him.
Faz, do you have Pavlich in your team?
Yeah, I've still got Pav in the side, and at this stage probably looking at holding on to him. As you said, his price is back down to only 430 now, so if you'd made this call a few weeks ago when he was up around 500,000, you'd maybe consider it then. You could have got a bit more cash out of him, but not a whole lot of value in doing it right now, I don't think.
Tend to agree with you guys, and that's actually really because of the result from last weekend and because of the man that we're about to talk about now. So Mr. Kukulamanza, that's a weird name from Twitter, has asked about Zorko and whether or not we get rid of him. So he's got a bloody 12 on the weekend, Zorko. What was that? Got subbed out and just, he was a senior player. They were lacking senior players and it was his time to stand up and deliver for the club, and he got subbed out, so that pretty much speaks for itself. He's just going to plummet in price after already dropping, what, 46K over the weekend. God damn it. He's set to drop, I think, another 20K this week and 20K the week after that if you still choose to keep him. So I was actually going to ditch Pav until Zork dished this up, and I think I might trade out Dane Zorko. What do you guys think about that?
Understandable, I guess. You know, having a premium scoring 12 is definitely not all you want. I did hear, though, that Zorko had a bit of gastro on the weekend. Obviously, you'd expect more than 12, even with gastro, but maybe that was it. Maybe it was really bad gastro or something like that, and you can put it down to that. I personally don't have him, and I'm thanking the Lord that that's the case. I can see why you're looking at ditching him.
I heard the same thing that you did, Faz. I heard that, obviously with Rockcliffe and Patful both having it, I actually heard that Zorko and even Jonathan Brown had it as well, but they were just simply lacking in numbers so badly that those guys had to go out there. They must have been the lesser of the sick guys there. So happy that I don't have him. He's back down at 400,000 now. I guess you can have the same sort of issue that Faz mentioned when we were talking about Pav, in that where do you go from there? Who do you trade him to?
So I guess that dampened my mood on trading him out a little bit. I didn't hear that same news about him being sick. I just was not happy, to be honest. It did not cap off a good weekend after the Steve Johnson debacle. Personally, more likely to hold on to Zorko Pav than I am to get rid of him. And that's just because, as we've talked about throughout the season, I seem to be struggling for value at the moment. And as Dunny and Faz kindly pointed out to me, neither Zorko or Pav are great prices to maneuver them at the moment. And so I think you're probably better off hoping they turn it around and trying to use your trades in a productive way elsewhere. I mean, you might get into another issue of side-swapping Zorko to another premium that doesn't work out. There'll be another waste of a trade. But for those guys that are looking for upgrading in the forward line, we have quite a few questions about that this week, and that'd be because of the teams that have come off the bye, in particular Port Adelaide. We've got a couple of blokes to talk about there. So question from Serge at Full Fantasy Forward. He's asking about Gray or Bruce in the forward line. What do you guys reckon about them?
Yeah, look, I'm really enjoying Robbie Gray's season, both from a fantasy perspective and a football perspective, yep, given that he plays for my team. I don't have him in fantasy, though, to be honest. I am seriously considering him. Priced at 541,900. He's averaging 108, got a break-even of 74. He's actually gone up nearly 100,000 on his original price, so well done to those who picked him at the start of the year. I think the big question over Robbie's always been his fitness and his body. His body's let him down quite a lot. There's been no sign of that this year, and he's getting a lot of run through the mid, as well as popping up and kicking a few goals as well. So I think he's quite a valid selection.
Nice. I love to hear that from a Port supporter, mate. Especially because I've been doing the show with Mark, and he's just not been happy with Gray's injury history at all. And it's been hard to get some positivity going on Robbie Gray, and so it's good to get some energy going about him.
I guess his last injury that he had was the knee, so I guess, you know, that can happen to anyone, whether that's just an unlucky injury. But the soft tissue injuries that he did have early on in his career seem to have disappeared, and I guess now they've got their fitness stuff sorted out and they're going really well with that. I think that, you know, he's really strengthened that part of his body up.
So how about him in comparison to Bruce? What do you guys reckon? Faz, Bruce, any thoughts on him?
Yeah, well, obviously a bit more value than Robbie Gray. I think Gray's, although he's got the low break-even, he's probably sitting about at the max price he's going to be at. Bruce, on the other hand, is at 465, averaging 100 so far for the season, and a break-even of 67, so, you know, a bit of value there. He's been kicking a lot of goals. I think, obviously, Buddy not being in the forward line is helping with that. So 24 for the season, and I noticed that he's actually scored multiple goals in every game so far this season, so that's an impressive stat. Bit of a low score against Sydney with only the 70, might have been scoring scoring his points in the wrong part of the game, I think. The one thing I'm not too sure about and would like to hear your guys' thoughts on is whether you think the injury to Rioli is going to hurt him, and how the rest of the team is looking a bit thin with Mitchell going down. And that's do you think Hawthorn's form is going to struggle, and will Bruce get more attention from defenders given Rioli's not there in the forward line?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, Faz. I think he's certainly in danger of that, but I guess Rioli is only a 2-3 weeker anyway, so hopefully that doesn't affect him for too long. I think the main concern with him is just place that small forward role, and you can see it in his scoring pattern. He's got that 140, 120, and 139. So when he breaks that 100 barrier, you know, it's a pretty decent score. It's pretty healthy, big score, but it's when you struggle with the games like 66, 70 as a small forward that really just drag your average down. So he's averaging 100 for the year. In his first three games, two were 120 plus, and at that point, he was looking absolutely golden. But I mean, if you look at his last five games, he only scored 100, above 100 in only one of those five. And considering you're paying 460, that might not be something that you're too keen on. That's the part that worries me most about Bruce, and it's just his role is really, really hard to play as a forward. It's only because he's such a good decision maker. He rarely wastes the ball. I mean, he's as consistent as a small forward can sort of get, that he's managed this sort of average, but it's just a really, really tough role to score in. But if there's any team to do it in, it's Hawthorn, and I think you can argue that the value that he presents might make him a better selection than Gray, considering Gray also has a slightly worse injury history. But personally, I prefer Gray just for that X factor, and he's a lot more fun to watch. What do you guys reckon? Personal preferences, Gray or Bruce?
I guess I have to say Gray, but I think you're right. I think he's just got that X factor, but Bruce certainly does have the value. But if I had unlimited cash, yeah, I'd probably go with Robbie.
Yeah, me too on that one. I'm just going to say I'm very jealous of Dunny being a Port Adelaide supporter. I'm loving watching him play this year, and you know, having to watch Essendon go around as a bunch of flogs. I wish I was on the Port Adelaide bandwagon.
Jump aboard, mate. Plenty of room for everyone.
All right, another Port player now. Wingard, in relation to these two guys, I think he is a little bit cheaper. He's 424k, averaging 84 for the season. Of course, last year, I think, managed that 95-ish average. So he has that history already. What do you guys reckon about Wingard? Obviously, he can score a lot of points in a short period of time. This year, his max score has been only 104, which I find a little bit surprising, though.
I guess, once again, I watch him every week and watch him fairly closely. And he doesn't seem to be having as much time through the midfield as he did last year. He seems to be spending a lot more time up forward. And for that reason, I guess he's relying on kicking goals to get that score. Particularly that was the case their last game against Fremantle, where he kicked, I think it was four or five in that game. And that's what really boosted his score that week. But he still only got to the 98, which is not quite what you'd sort of be looking for from someone like him. So if you've got him, I'd hang in there with him. But at the moment, I don't know that I'd be looking to bring him in just yet if you're going to put him in the mids. But if you're going to play him up forward, I guess the average of 84, I don't know if that'll be enough for you.
I think that sounds like a pretty good reason to leave him out, your explanation there. Makes a lot of sense with what you're saying about not getting enough possessions to match his points from his goals. We've seen that in the past with, I think, even Lewis Jetta. He had that excellent season, but he only averaged 80 that year. That might be the case with Wingard this year. Move on to a question here from Ryan on Twitter, Rizza Circo Boy. Is Taylor Walker worth it at 300k? He was pretty good in his first match back. So classic super coaches, our eyes always light up with these premiums returning from injury. 56 on return. What do you guys reckon? He's got value left in him?
You definitely think that 56 can rise, given that he was very inaccurate, scoring 0 goals, 4 on the weekend. So if that was, you know, 4 goals, 0, it'd probably be looking much closer to 100, that score. And yeah, Adelaide seemed to be on the up after a bit of a slow start to the season. Jenkins providing some good support up forward. In 2012, he had the average of 100, but I think he's had 3 seasons averaging in the 60s, and his first season was in the 40s somewhere. So don't know if he's got it quite in him to be up there with, you know, the 9500 average, but you know, at the price of 300, you guess you're not really expecting that. If he could get up to a 90 average, that'd probably be serviceable for that price.
Yeah, I agree with you, Faz. I don't know that he's got the big average in him at the moment. I actually went along and watched that game against Collingwood for Adelaide last week, and yeah, he was a bit inaccurate. He dropped a few marks. That'll come back. Yeah, he's going to lift the scoring from what he got the other night. He had a bit of form in the SANFL, but you know, getting back to the AFL level is a whole different ball game. But I'm interested to see how that partnership goes with Jenkins. I mean, Jenkins played really well against Collingwood this week. certainly not someone that I'm considering from a super coach point of view, but what that does do is I think it pushes Taylor Walker up the ground a bit more, sort of playing that forward between sort of half forward and the wing, because he's just got that pace, or not pace, but you know, he's good, a good lead-up marker. So interested to see how he goes. At 299, though, I think you can't really go too wrong with him, but just don't expect the massive average.
Question here from BKB on Twitter. He's asking about Charlie Cameron, so also from Adelaide. Played his first game on the weekend and was just really eye-catching more than anything. But, of course, his Supercoach points were pretty decent as well. He scored 89. How do you guys reckon he'll go for the rest of the year? Is he a chance to stay in the Adelaide outfit, available in the forward line?
There's been a lot of pressure, I guess, from the media to get Charlie Cameron in this side. He's certainly been doing well in the Crows SANFL team, and that's a team that's actually been struggling a fair bit this year, so he's been standing out quite well there. As I said, I went to the game the other night, and he really did look flashy in the parts that he did, and he certainly looked good, didn't look like he was lost or anything like that. Will he hold his spot long term? I'm not sure. The Crows do, you know, have a few injuries coming back soon, which might push a few guys out of the positions they're in now, you know, and might push Cameron just slightly out of the team. But if you needed someone to make you some cash over the next few weeks, I can't see him dropping out in the next 2 or 3 weeks, but he is still a vest candidate in my eyes, really, because I don't think Crouch won't get the vest again this week, I don't think, and it could fall to someone like Cameron.
Really worry about his job security moving forward. He's late to AFL footy, having come from a rugby background, so he could improve a lot in a short period of time, but he could also take quite a while to find his feet. So I think at 72 kilos or so, and considering Adelaide have quite a large range of mid-tier players, I don't think he's a must-have or even a player that you have to look at bringing in. But if you're looking for a downgrade option in your forward line, you'd think that he might be good for, you know, maybe 5 games for the rest of the season. I wouldn't be too optimistic that he'd play much more, though. And the last guy we're going to talk about this week, fellas, is Ben Lennon, so another rookie available in the forward line, playing for Richmond. Faz, why don't you tell us a little bit about Ben Lennon?
Didn't get to see any of his game, unfortunately. Only saw the start of the Richmond-Melbourne game, and he came on in as the sub in the third quarter, so very impressive score to get 58, you know, only playing half a game of footy, 2 goals and 8 touches, so, you know, the game was a tight one, so second half mattered more. He was a pretty high pick in last year's draft, pick 12, and by all accounts, he was a bit of a slider. He was a AIS kid, I think All-Australian, played some senior footy actually up north. Looks like he's another quality kid that Richmond have got on their list, and you'd imagine the way the season's going, they're not going to be dropping kids anytime soon. They'll be trying to get as many games into them.
Yeah, I reckon that's a good call, Faz. I think he's going to hold his spot for at least the next few weeks, particularly given the situation the Tigers find themselves in at the moment. And I think you're right. I think it's, you know, it's some of those mid-tier guys that are going to find their way out. I mean, they might as well start playing these younger high draft picks that they've got there just to see what they can do. So I reckon he's good for, you know, at least the next few, yeah, 3 to 4 weeks at a minimum.
He did start off the season with a bit of a knee injury, so I think he missed the first game of the VFL season. So he's had to build into it as well. So I think his composure, the fact that he's a good, strong overhead mark, should mean that he might be worth paying a little bit extra for. Actually, his job security is probably worth the little bit extra just in itself. So probably one of the best options of all the rookies that we've talked about today, as expected, coming from that draft pick and that higher price tag, I suppose. So that wraps up a pretty big show, and thank you so much to Faz and Dunny for coming on and helping us out, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
So to our Supercoach Coach community, all the best this week. It's the last round of the buys. I know some people are having a little bit of issues getting players on park in round 10. I'm certainly going to have my frustrations with Jono out with his suspension. So all the best with your trading, and we'll catch you guys next week. See ya.
See ya.
See ya, guys. Congrats, Mark.